Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Peter Phillips with Project Censored. Joining us today as co-host is California Green Party activist Laura Wells. Mickey Huff is taking a family day. Today we will interview Professor Peter Matthews regarding his new book, Dollar Democracy, with Liberty and Justice for Some. He covers key issues including the decline of the middle class, inequality in education, health care, the collapse of the environment, and what needs to be done. We hope you stay tuned. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Peter Phillips. Today we have a co-host, Laura Wells, California Green Party activist. She's an organizer with No Corporate Money campaign, which is having candidates pledge to take no corporate money and voters declare their intention to vote for candidates that take no corporate money. She was a Green Party candidate for governor in 2010 and was arrested outside a gubernatorial debate for trespassing on private property. Her focus is on solutions to California finances, including proposals for state bank and for taxing the rich. Laura, thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's nice to be here.
Joining us also today is Peter Matthews. He's an author of Dollar Democracy, with Liberty and Justice for Some, How to Reclaim the American Dream for All, which is about the corrupting influence of private money in politics and what has caused the disappearing middle class, environmental destruction, dismantling the public education system, endangering of our food supply and water, and a lack of health care. Peter has been a professor for 30 years, Cypress College, teaching political science, and he's also taught at California State University Fullerton. He's a guest host on KPFK down in L.A., and a political analyst for KFI AM 640 on Sunday mornings. News show, Peter Matthews was the Democratic Party nominee for the U.S. Congress in 1998 and had a very close race in Long Beach. Oh, so Peter, welcome.
Good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your purpose with the book here.
Well, the purpose for my book is how to return America to a democratic republic and not an empire. And it does go to dollars in politics. The middle class is disappearing, as you know. The rich have been getting richer and richer. The average CEO is making 400 times the income of the average worker in America today. Just in 1980, before Reagan, it was 40 to 1, the ratio. In Germany, it's 27 to 1. That cannot work. It cannot last to sustain itself either economically or morally or ethically, because when you have the top half of 1% running the show, the rest of America and the United States and the world will suffer tremendously, Peter. And that's what the book is about, how to take money out of politics. So, Laura, I was delighted to hear what you're doing with getting people to pledge to not accept corporate money as candidates.
A perfect example is here locally in the Bay Area, Richmond, California, where they have the Richmond Progressive Alliance, and they pledge to take no money from corporations, no money from developers, which is the local level of corruption. And they're up against Chevron candidates who are taking millions of dollars, and they've won. Often they win.
I've been following that, Laura. It's very exciting for us to see that happen. Occasionally, you know, it's very tough.
Yes, but it's a vanguard.
It is a vanguard, and it can happen. That shows they can do it when people organize and have good ideas and go up against the powerful wealthy interests who really are bankrupt morally and ethically and politically. All they want is money. Profits, profits, profits. Chevron only cares about the bottom line. All the pollution in Richmond, which is destroying our children and adult lives, is horrible. So it's Dollar Democracy shows how in each chapter that I have, it covers one specific issue area, starting with the Wall Street crash, the gap between rich and poor, but also health care, jobs, education, the environment, food justice, GMOs and Monsanto and chemicals, as well as how to solve the problem with the 28th We the People Amendment. All that's in the book.
Well, you start right out by talking about the disappearing middle class.
Yes.
And I think we all have a sense of that over the last 50 years now. Since the 70s, we've seen kind of a reverse flow of how money works in this country and a decline of the working class. Tell us a little bit about your perspectives on that.
Absolutely. I've done some statistical research, and we know that the middle class has shrunk by over 8% in the last 20 years. And that has a lot to do with this dollar democracy, where the biggest, wealthiest people buy the politicians who give the rich people, the super rich, tax breaks, loopholes, and cut programs that empower the middle class and the working poor, like public education, public health, clean food and water and air. They take it away. Tuitions, Laura, I've got to tell you folks know all about it. Peter, you're a professor. My students at Foothill College, where I started teaching in the Bay Area 30 years ago, were paying no tuition in 1976. They paid $6 for all 15 units of classes, and so did Governor Schwarzenegger, who went to school in Santa Monica College. Governor Wilson paid zero at UC Berkeley Law School, and I put that in my book and documented. And he got through with school, with college, with a higher education, became a lawyer, a business person, lived the American dream, so to speak. That's been taken away from our young people today because of dollar democracy.
And it's interesting that you mentioned the year 1976, which was 2 years before 1978, which is when Prop 13 was passed. And rather than credit Reagan with the tax revolt, 1978, Prop 13, is really what kicked that off and what enabled people to have so much more money than they had before. The CEOs, 400 times the average worker versus 7 or 27 or whatever, is taxes. They stopped being taxed so that when they made the decision to increase their salaries, they didn't have to pay some of that in taxes, 91%. Which was the amount of the upper income tax bracket when Eisenhower left office in 1961.
Right.
It was 91%. When they weren't facing that, they gathered more and more power. And as you point out in Dollar Democracy, they gathered up our democracy.
That's right. They actually bought or stole the democracy with their money. And this is just outrageous because we cannot have a democracy without a large, vibrant middle class, a working middle class. And to have allow us to for us to have allowed this to happen is totally egregious. And they took it from us, too. And they control the media. And this is why I love what you guys are doing in Project Censored. You've been doing for years now, Peter and Mickey and Laura. Project Censored shows what information is being withheld from the American public, how the corporate elites control and own the media. And that's how they can get away with this. And by the way, UC system now has become a private university. Do you know that? The majority of the funding for UC comes from the private sector. From foundations, corporations, private tuitions, only about 38% of UC funding comes from the state. So how do you call that flagship public university that was tuition-free has become now a private university? It's a sin.
Right. It was the greatest example, the model in the country. And since Prop 13 stopped taxing the rich, I have my favorite button is tax the rich, duh.
Yes. It's a no-brainer.
Most people Americans agree with that.
Absolutely.
But it's our public officials who...
And the other thing, Laura, is the corporate tax loopholes. Peter, I have it in my book, a whole table there showing 40 corporations that don't pay over billions of dollars in taxes a year because of legal loopholes written for them by the politicians whom they helped elect with their funding, campaign funding, and Facebook is way up there. They made $1.02 billion in 2012 and paid zero income tax because of a legal loophole, and they received $429 million in subsidies, corporate welfare. They had a negative 40% tax burden, Laura. Peter, how would you like to have a negative 40% tax burden, the working people?
There's this general belief, you know, that the state is broke, that cities and municipalities can't afford to offer services anymore. There has to be cutbacks, even at the national level. Ultimately, in Social Security, it's going to be broke. I mean, there's more wealth in California today than ever. Yes. It's just concentrated in very narrow upper 1% of the people and corporations. And they've avoided paying taxes. So we're not broke.
No, we're not. It's a hoax. That's a big hoax. We are not broke. Mm-hmm. This is the richest economy in the world, the history of humankind. And you're telling me we can't afford to fund our K through university? Look at Germany. They just went completely tuition-free. In Germany, they have programs for foreign students who speak English in English, about 90 bachelor's degree programs and master's degree for international students to come in. And the German students pay no tuition. All over Europe, it's that way. We used to have it here. So that, to me, is why the book was written, to show that we've taken away opportunity from the middle class and the working poor, which is not the way America is supposed to work, or any country in the world. And this has international implications. Now it's about globalization, about TPP, about owning the world. These corporations aren't content with owning America. They're trying to own the world now. It's a horrible situation. We've got to fight it back, and we are organizing against TPP, and I know you folks are, too.
And flush the TPP.
Yes, exactly. Those are the things in my book. And I go into a lot of also issues of ethics and morality because, to me, the specific issues have to be grounded in philosophical underpinnings, which really makes us human. As human beings, we have this gift of reason, we like to think, at least, an intuition, which shows us what we should do to do the right thing, the thing which will help each human being in the country and the world achieve their full potential. We know how to do it. It's not rocket science. You know, and we've done it in different parts of the world, our own country. And yet these corporate robber barons are allowed to take it away from us because the public is misinformed, Peter. That's why it's so great what you're doing with Project Censored.
We look at politics today and the elements of campaigns. Critical thinking is not part of that. And, you know, certainly advertisements for candidates on television is not part of that. And so it becomes who looks the best, who is most interesting, who presents an image or an emotional content that seems exciting or something. It's really discouraging to think along those lines that we still call it a democracy when, in fact, voting is almost, in many cases, a waste of time between the two primary parties. And Peter, you're a Democrat, so,
green at heart.
Well, I'm advocating for people to be a green in registration.
I understand fully.
Shift
I totally
the power.
Understand. Absolutely. I understand what you're saying, Laura. And I would like to say that Frederick Douglass said it really well. He said, power concedes nothing without a demand. Power concedes nothing without a demand. So we, the people, have to demand, no matter what party you're in. Right now, we've got to come together as working people and say to the top 1%, you're not going to run the world anymore, and you're not going to have this TPP or TTIP and the other kinds of free trade agreements, which is so bogus, you know. And talk about how it's going to not only export our jobs and drive wages down further, but destroy the environment, our food supply, where corporations can actually sue in front of an international tribunal made up of corporate lawyers who will then decide where the corporation has a right to sue for future profits if the people of California regulate them. Let's say fracking, for example. We can't even put a moratorium on fracking, or the oil companies will sue at these tribunals and take the money away from us. And we know money talks right now. We got to fix that.
Well, certainly NAFTA set us up for that.
Yes.
And that was under the Clinton administration.
Absolutely.
And we are looking at the possibilities of another Clinton president that would just be more of the same.
More of the same.
And TPP and the other trade agreements that are pending, privatization of public services in a very big way internationally, benefits that global 1%. And that concentrated, there's only a few thousand people in that 1% that manage the money market of $100 trillion in the world. It's an incredible concentration of wealth that we've lost control over, and they are dominating our lives on a regular basis.
One of the things I wanted to say about the money power is that we look at it as there's money power and there's people power. And so the thing to be really cautious about is how they are trying to reduce our people power.
Mm-hmm.
And even choices that we individually can make. And one of those things is don't vote. The half of a 1% that is running things loves it when we don't vote. I've seen people have the opposite reaction to what I wish there were. For example, when the Koch brothers, why would the Koch brothers announce that they were going to put in zillions of dollars into the next campaign? It's to discourage people from actually engaging.
Yes, to throw up their hand and say, we can't beat this.
We can't make any difference. And the opposite is what needs to happen. It's like vote, vote, vote. A young activist friend, his mother said, my favorite quote about voting, vote. It's the least you can do. Just don't make it the only thing you do. And to me, with the No Corporate Money campaign, make it easy on yourself. Only vote for people that don't take corporate money.
There you go.
Then you don't have to, just find out where they're funded. Because when they are funded by the corporations, which is equal to the 1%, and by the developers, then anybody that works in an office, if you don't do what the boss does, you're out of that office. And that's the same thing with government offices. If you don't do what your boss does, the one who's paying you, then you're out.
So, Laura, I think that's fantastic about this campaign of give up corporate money. It's one of my 13 points in the book. At the last chapter, we have an action plan in which we have a 13-point program, a demand, starting with give up corporate money to every candidate. And you've already done this. You already put it out there. This is great.
Yes.
And we gave the phone numbers of all the members of Congress in my book, a direct line to Washington, D.C., where people can call and demand to talk to them.
We're listening to the Project Censored show on Pacifica Radio, and we're going to take a short musical break. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Peter Phillips. Laura Wells is our co-host today. She's a Green Party candidate, former candidate for governor here in California, very strong activist with the Green Party. We're interviewing Peter Matthews, who's author of Dollar Democracy, with Liberty and Justice for Some, and How to Reclaim the American Dream for All. And you were starting to talk about that. How are we going to reclaim the American Dream?
Well, first I asked, what is the American Dream? I do an informal survey with my students every year, every semester, and I find that about 90% say we would like to be able to have a life where we can have a job that pays well enough and we enjoy our work and we can afford to pay for our children's school as well as college tuitions and have a home, perhaps buy a home, and a little free time to be with our families and to go out on vacations and play sports. It's a very modest dream, which I think is fulfilling, especially if they add poetry or philosophy to that, you know? I have about 10% of my students who say, our American dream is not that. We want much more. We believe in making millions of dollars, billions of dollars, get it the way you can legally, and if we have to cut corners a bit, so what? That's life. So it's interesting to see the juxtaposition of those two views in my classroom and the debates and discussions that follow. So the American dream, how do we reclaim it? First of all, do what Laura said. Demand that candidates refuse all corporate money and only go with public individual financing, small amounts of money, and volunteers. Second, clean money elections, which they have in Maine and Arizona that pioneered it, which is voluntary public financing of elections. And I'm sure most of our listeners know how that works. But basically, in Maine, if you're running for state assembly, you want to run as a clean money candidate. You pledge to not accept any private money or even your own private money, not spend it. And instead, you collect $5 per person in your district, and that money is used as a nominating fee. As you turn that money over to the Election Commission of Maine, you automatically become a clean money candidate. They put you on the ballot, and you can spend time campaigning and meeting with voters and not begging for money. The third way is the movement to bring in a 28th Amendment of the United States Constitution. The We the People Amendment is what I'm working with the Move to Amend folks, but there are other movements also to bring this 28th Amendment that would immediately, in the amendment, say that corporations are not natural persons with human rights, protecting the Bill of Rights, and money is not equal to speech. So that would completely even the playing field out between the American people and the big corporations. They could still make money, but they can't buy the government with this amendment. And on top of that, we've got to stop TPP, because now you have even the 20th Amendment might become worthless if TPP passes, because now you have supranational tribunals deciding what's constitutional for the American people. That's outrageous. But that's what the book suggests, those things to try to bring back the American Dream, which also starts with getting people to understand the truth of what's going on. I love Antonio Gramsci's idea about the ideational realm, the propaganda realm, controlling, being the outside moat of the castle, that we have to bring that down and change it in order to get to the castle and make it democratic.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're fighting against is still Margaret Thatcher, who was in the 80s the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, had her one of her famous phrases was, Tina, there is no alternative. And it's to let people know that there are alternatives. There are alternatives to the problems that we're facing. And among those alternatives are other political parties, and there are other ideas like socialism, communism, like union organizing, trade unions, and those things that have been pushed out of the discourse. But there are alternatives, yes, Margaret.
And I think we should definitely demand that all of the political party spectrum members, from the Green Party even to the Libertarian Party, should be allowed to come and have debates and enter the debates, the national debates. So I'm kind of interested that at least Bernie Sanders is raising some issues that need to be raised that Hillary Clinton would have never raised, the corporate Democrat that she is, and issues like income equity and universal health care and stopping the war machine. A whole chapter, by the way, in my new second edition is called Pentagon Fraud, Waste, and Abuse, and how that is just sinking and killing us in America. Literally, I mean, the kind of boondoggle programs, Peter and Laura, the F-35C Joint Strike Fighter, which was contracted with Lockheed Martin 20 years ago to be built for $69 million a piece, that's a lot of money, right, has escalated now with cost overruns and late arrivals to $337 million a piece. And the Congress just voted for almost $1 billion to buy two or three of those planes. Unbelievable. That could go for so much for schools, for healthcare, for environmental sustainability, for new entrepreneurs who would come in with green technologies. Mm-hmm. We are so far behind. China has become the first country now to produce a solar-powered car. That'll be in this market a year from now. And they've put together a high-speed system in China with 8,000 miles of track, and they're pursuing a different type of foreign policy. I'm not saying China is perfect, but China is now producing empowerment programs throughout the world. For example, they took that high-speed rail. They offered Turkey about $800 billion in a loan, very low interest rate loan, to buy the high-speed rail from China. And China is training the Turkish engineers and having China work, to build that system in Turkey. And they're doing the same thing in northern part of South America to connect Brazil to Peru. So our foreign policy, we're the number one world exporter of weapons, and it's horrendous. We have 1,000 military bases around the world in 150 countries. That's about three-quarters of the countries. And it costs the taxpayer here $250 billion just to maintain those bases per year, Laura.
And it's not
outrageous.
Making us safer.
It's making us less safe.
It's making us hated.
And resented and hated.
Right.
So those are the things
It makes the global 1% safer that they can use their money anywhere in the world and have protection from U.S. NATO empire forces in terms of expending that money in whatever way they choose.
We, the people, have to wake up. I'm hoping that my book gets read by a few people because it has these solutions. Dr. Michael Parenti, a friend of ours, he spoke on this station many times. He has an endorsement on the back. I thought it was quite poignant. He says, Peter Matthews provides us with stories of his personal activism along with a cogent political analysis of what is happening to our country and our world. I like this part the best. With clarity and courage, he fights against dollar democracy on behalf of real democracy. Well written and well informed, this book is a citizen's weapon. Citizen's weapon, Laura. People could get this information and get galvanized. I love that.
Right. It boils down to me often, what can we do as individuals? Because
yes.
I think one of the biggest dangers is that people lose hope. Do you know, like when the Koch brothers mentioned that? The Koch brothers make their announcement, and then people's hope goes down. It's like, no, that's when we need to galvanize people power. That's when we need to say that, no, you're not going to make me stop voting. I'm
going to
vote
for back.
Yeah, we're going to fight back. We're going to gather together. And in your book, in those things that people can support, Move to Amend. People can support public and find out about and support public campaign financing. Vote for people that don't take corporate money. And one of the interesting things about the fact that there are so many problems in the world is that there's bound to be something that rings your chimes, you know, that really pulls each and every person, that there's something that you can do toward that where you can
make a difference, right?
Yeah, make a difference and find meaning and actually even have some fun, you know, but look for it.
You mentioned Bernie Sanders, and I want to ask, is he kind of in the direction of no corporate money? He certainly get a lot of small donations. A good friend of mine who's, I doubt, ever donated to a campaign and hardly can afford it, sent him $5 because he was inspired. Is that a positive direction that so many people are seeing that?
To me, it all depends on where he leads us down the path. And unfortunately, the sheepdogging approach, which was written about by Bruce Dixon of the Black Agenda Report, he laid it out from 1984 and afterward, anytime that there wasn't a Democratic Party incumbent president running, there would be somebody like a Bernie Sanders. If he ends up supporting a candidate who is not mentioning and opposed to all of the things that he's talking about, then he will have done the country a disservice, I believe. But the service is to bring these things up. But talk is one thing. Action is another. And if he ends up supporting somebody who opposes all of those things that he's talking about, that to me is a very big problem.
It is, because it really sets a lot of progressive movement back, and it just keeps the Democratic corporate Democrats in power, basically.
Yes.
Another favorite of mine was Senator Paul Wellstone, a real genuine human being. I wrote about him in my book. I got to meet him and his wife, Sheila, and he didn't take corporate money. He ran a grassroots campaign, won the Senate seat, won it the second time with a larger margin after voting against the Iraq War and for a single payer. And the third time, of course, his plane came down in a crash, didn't it? A week before the election. But again, working within the system, it's a systemic problem. So you're right about the sheepdogging idea that if someone like Bernie runs the Democratic primary, comes out second to Hillary or whoever it is, and then endorses Hillary with no qualifications when Hillary's still supporting the war machine, imperial foreign policy, nothing about taxing the rich, so then that would be wrong. That would be very bad for all of us, I think.
And that cements the idea that there is no alternative.
Yes.
And that people have to line up with the candidates whose words they like. And it's like, look at the record, not the rhetoric. I heard that on Project Censored show recently.
That's a good one. It's the record, right? And Bernie did, in fact, make public the private utilities when he was mayor of Burlington. He has a good record in many ways. But you're right, though, Laura. I'm with you 100% about sheepdogging.
Let's talk about the climate. You have a chapter in your book, Peter, about the climate. We have to talk about it in terms of climate disruption, which includes warming and some very serious crisis-level new research coming out. Dar Jamel has been writing about that in Truth Out, talking about sea rises in the 20-foot range in 35 years. It's massive. And so they're using the terminology sixth extinction. And that's just not little creatures out in the forest. That could be us, too.
Us, too. Absolutely. And the new evidence is coming in. Absolutely correct. And we can't be sitting on our laurels and saying, oh, let's have cap and trade. What the heck is that? The right of companies to corporate pollute, to buy pollution credits? What nonsense those who support it, including Governor Brown. There should be strict regulations, reductions immediately, move to alternative energy, solar power, wind power, tide power. We have the technology. Mm-hmm. It's going to take the political will. But you know, Laura, I love what you said about hope. We need to know our accomplishments, right? And so when we know what we did accomplish in the past, the anti-slavery movement, the abolitionist movement, the civil rights movement, the women's equality movement, the Americans with Disabilities movement, all of those movements that were social movements started by the people. When the people lead, the leaders will follow. Mahatma Gandhi. When the people lead, the leaders will follow. We've got to do that again. We've got to do that right now again to do it that way, because the leaders are not going to do it unless we push them. And we've got to work inside-outside strategy, I say.
Yeah. And I think I'm probably not the only one who struggles all the time with the question of what does it mean? What am I doing that really is meaningful? And the thing that we don't know exactly what's going to happen in the future. We just don't. And everything that we're doing now that is toward the world that we want can serve as an example, as a model, as an alternative when people are ready, or, you know, whatever. The main result is that we are creating moment by moment the world that we want.
May I just mention one more thing? Germany has been exemplary in terms of moving the green economy. They have 50% of their electricity is produced by alternative energy because they had what's called a feed-in tariff. They required 99 cents per kilowatt hour to be paid to people who have solar panels on their houses. It's now phased down to 49 cents. But Maine became the first state, Maine, the state with clean money elections, to bring in a 33-cent tariff, feed-in tariff, which is really great. We have to do that. So, Laura, what about that? Specific things that we could demand to do that and then move forward politically on that.
Exactly. You know, and it takes people that aren't taking corporate money to be able to move those things forward.
That's
yes.
Right. Exactly.
Perfect.
This is the Project Censor Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Peter Phillips. In studio today with me as a co-host is Laura Wells, a Green Party activist in Oakland, one of the founders and managing editor of the National Green Party newspaper. We've been interviewing Peter Matthews, author of Dollar Democracy, Liberty and Justice for Some. and we think that's a very important title. Let's talk a little bit about health care. You have a chapter on that in your book, Peter, and what's the state of health care today? Obamacare, as it's called, is being attacked. That seems so ironic to me in the sense that it's not really what we need in the first place. So.
It's attacked. Isn't that something?
Yes.
It is not what we needed. It has done a little bit of good. I say it's a very small step in the right direction because it did remove the pre-existing condition requirements and allowed young people to stay on their parents' insurance. But that is not what we needed. We needed a single-payer, universal, comprehensive system that's nonprofit, as Medicare for All, as they have in Canada, as many other countries have. And it works so much better. Peter, as you know, in my book, I point out that our life expectancy, average life expectancy in the United States, is 2 to 3 years shorter than the countries that have single-payer. Infant mortality rates are higher here because of that. Lack of dental care. That's something I address in my book. Dentistry is part of the medical condition. So that's not at all addressed by Obamacare. Neither is cost containment, and it wouldn't be addressed with this private system. Obama decided to make a deal with the devil. The corporate insurance companies, the drug companies, all of them say, what will you guys give me? You give me a little bit, I'll take it as long as you give me a little bit. And that's just not the way I would have done it if I could have had a chance to do it. We needed to look at our ethical question of health being part of human right. It is a human right to be guaranteed for all. Because without our health, we don't have the rights to life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness.
For a while there, Obama had a filibuster-proof Congress.
Yes,
and did not need to do a bipartisan approach to that. As a matter of fact, taking single-payer off the table, not even as a discussion, is the hardest thing for me to accept. People who want to defend the record of Obama and say, well, you know, look, he improved health care. Kept insurance companies right in there and kept the high cost in there. And so we can do better than that, and some states are trying to do that, but that's been made somewhat difficult.
Yes, and by the way, his plan, Obamacare, even when it's implemented fully, will leave 20 million Americans with no coverage. And that's unacceptable. That is not universal health care, and it should not have been sold that way either. So we have to tell the truth about it and move to single payer. Public option was even backed down on that, a small public option, which would have been better than what we have. But we needed a universal single-payer system, and he could have sold it to us, I think. He had the talent, but look, where does his money come from? Obama got hundreds of millions from Wall Street. You know, individual donors, yes, but they were Wall Street brokers, Wall Street stock market guys, and he took so much money from them, he was obligated. That's one reason he brought in Geithner and Larry Summers, and those guys were the foxes guarding the chicken coop. He brings them back after they crashed the system. It's outrageous.
So everything that we can do to get that money out of our democracy to change that, let's do it.
Laura, you've been blogging about Cuba. I think they have one of the best healthcare systems in the world.
It was interesting. Our tour guide said that the health of the children has improved so much, and he said everybody's up to date on their vaccinations. Now, he must have seen some people's faces go weird in the bus because he said, no, I know that that's a controversy in the United States, but here there's no profit-making companies that are making the vaccinations, and everybody trusts them, and they don't have vaccinations they don't need with ingredients that they don't need. And so that was one of the things that really struck me. The fact that it's not a profit-making concern means it is a health-making concern.
Also, Cuba went to organic farming when the Soviets stopped subsidizing them. They went out of business. No more Soviet Union. Cuba began organic farming and has universal organic farming. It's fantastic.
And so it all works together. Yes. Agricultural industry, the health industry. Yeah.
And I talk about the Halliburton loophole in my book. You know, Halliburton and the oil companies and coal companies are the only ones exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act. And they got that pushed in through Dick Cheney and lobbying. And that's the dollar democracy killing our water supply. Unbelievable. Fracking in California. So we have also the other things dealing with Monsanto and glyphosate, which is a horrible chemical in Roundup. And Monsanto is able to propagandize all over the world in our media. And by the way, I tried to get on NBC Bay Area here because I was on there doing the oil tax, Peter. They had me on there talking about, you know, bringing money for education. I sent the NBC Bay Area producer, I said, I've got a new book out. It actually explains the problem in education even more fully. Would you like to have me on? She sends me an email saying, well, Peter, congratulations, but this subject matter is not appropriate for my program. So thank you. Good luck on getting other stages. There's your corporate media for you.
Right. That brings me back to tax the rich, duh, because they've got so much money that all you can do, you can't buy enough islands, you can't buy enough jets, you buy power. And the power that you buy are politicians and media.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And what we really want, to me, sometimes it's not the concentration of money is huge, but it's, as you're pointing out, it's the concentration of power that it brings. And that concentration of power, owning the politicians, owning the government, and owning the media, takes away the possibility for us to make decisions for ourselves and our communities.
TPP. And that's the most pernicious aspect of it. I've got an action plan here. I got a couple of things to read here. It says that, you know, use the above website, give a website where they can contact the members of Congress. Plus, we give them their phone numbers as well. And the demands we have, first of all, demand that your representatives and senators serve the American people, not big corporations. They must, number one, give up campaign money from corporate lobbyists and win without it, as Paul Wellstone did. Number two, run as clean money candidates. Number three, rely on volunteers and small donations from individuals. Number four, close unnecessary corporate tax loopholes to bring in money to invest in America and pay down the national debt. Number five, create high-paying jobs and stop outsourcing them. Number five, bring back quality tuition-free education as in all other advanced countries and as in California from 1960 to 1980. Stop the big corporations from destroying our air, water, and soil, and switch from fossil fuels to renewable energy. The next one is stop big corporations from endangering our lives with harmful chemicals, pesticides, and genetically modified foods, and require labeling of GMOs. And I got a couple more here. Break up the big banks and re-regulate them to prevent another great recession by restoring the Glass-Steagall Act. Implement a financial transaction tax on Wall Street to make it pay for destroying the American economy and to help rebuild the middle class. End waste, fraud, and abuse in military spending by auditing the Pentagon, the only government department not audited. Unbelievable. And they have $1 trillion budget a year. Create small business opportunity by providing low-interest loans and lowering their taxes. And last but not least, sponsor the We the People 28th Amendment to the Constitution that states that corporations are not persons with natural rights and that money is not equal to speech and can be strictly regulated. This will get big money out of politics, prevent corporations from buying our government, and return our government to the American people.
Peter, wonderful list. I mean, that's a really nice statement about what kinds of things we need to do. I was so discouraged when the House passed making it illegal for states to require GMO labeling.
Yes.
Now, that hasn't gone to the Senate yet, but, I mean, just the fact that the House, members of Congress, would pass that, I mean, that is nothing but corporations in your pockets. And
it's unconstitutional as well, because the states have a right to regulate those things. We've got to speak up against that and stop the Senate from approving it, because I'm not sure what Obama might do. He might actually sign it. Look at him. Obama appointed Michael Taylor to the FDA to regulate food, and Michael Taylor comes from Monsanto, and has a revolving door back and forth, back and forth. So you really have to—this dollar democracy is even more extensive than we think, and we're looking at our children's lives.
Yeah.
So we have to fix this.
It's like, how can we have our next generation in debt when they're 21, 22 years old? How can we?
$20,000, $30,000, $50,000 in debt, yes.
Yeah.
I have a section on that in the book as well. So
it's really important. Yeah. It's quite a list, Peter. The environmental issues, of course, stand out high on my mind as a crisis of great proportion.
Deep, yes.
It's a Holocaust pending. Certainly a catastrophe pending that could impact and kill billions of people on our planet. So nuclear war is right up there, and the environmental destruction is right up there as well. Laura, how do you see this list of Peter's?
What I was just thinking of is that there are examples. You know, we mentioned early on Richmond and how they've gone up against the largest corporation in California, mm-hmm. Chevron, and gotten them to pay more taxes and working on their reducing pollution. One of the things that we don't hear enough about are places where things are happening for the good.
Yeah.
And Latin America is one of those places where there are a number of examples and cooperatives and cooperatively run factories and things like that. And also, both Bush and Obama went down to Latin America for a free trade agreement of the Americas. And both Bush and Obama came back empty-handed because they have learned, even as countries, the value of solidarity. Yeah. That's standing up and supporting your fellow people, standing up and supporting your fellow nations.
And sovereignty. Yes.
And sovereignty.
Sovereignty.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that, and which is a very, very important principle that we need to not give away our sovereignty. And I mean that both individually and our sovereignty and our solidarity.
Yes.
You know, that anything that we're doing that can help us learn and grow, in those areas are important because look what happened with the Free Trade Agreement of America. It did not happen. So those kinds of things are possible. And in Latin America, inequality is being reduced and health care is becoming more and more accessible and things like that. So it's absolutely doable.
So when the people lead, the leaders will follow, right?
Hey,
and they're proving
it
in Latin America already. Yeah, and this TPP, we've got to lead on this. We have got to stop it dead in its tracks. The fast track, forget that. We need no track.
Yeah.
Forget about fast track.
Right.
No track TPP, because this is giving away not only our sovereignty, but our entire lives in so many areas. So we're working on that together. Mm-hmm. And then we got groups that are building coalitions with labor, environmental groups, education groups coming together to have a nationwide anti-TPP action in the next 2 or 3 months. So have them go to our website, please, and check it out, if you don't mind. You can go to my website, and we'll put some leads to the other websites. It's epetermatthews.com, epetermatthews.com. Or look us up on Facebook, Stop TPP. There we go.
You had mentioned earlier political campaign funding. So what do we know now about the campaign contributions that have been going to the candidates that have announced for presidency?
It's on steroids. It's campaign funding by the corporations on steroids right now. And, you know, last election in 2012, the presidential election, it was $6.2 billion, which was the highest ever spent and donated. Now, with Citizens United and McCutcheon versus FEC, those other rulings by the courts, which have allowed dollar democracy to become so powerful, it is a free-for-all. I just read that these super PACs are controlling everything, and every candidate has a super PAC or more, where these donors don't have to even declare who gave them money. And they're fronting as public service groups. It's a big phony craziness. And the dollars, I don't know if I talked about this earlier, but the 400 families in this country have given over half the money so far to all the federal candidates, including the presidency. 400 families donated half the money right now. So it's just outrageous. We've got to do something, Peter. This is, the public has to know about this and demand. And Laura, I'm going to really work with you on this. Get people to demand their candidates run without corporate money. And a lot of my students are interested in that, so we'll get it going through the campuses as well.
May I mention Richmond? Once again, Chevron put in the last election, 2014, November, they put, I think, $3 million up against five candidates, three of whom were bona fide no corporate money candidates. And Chevron lost all five of them. And so it can happen.
Done, yes.
But people have to find a reason to vote. And I say, very easy, just vote for people that don't take corporate money. And on the initiatives, vote for the side that's not getting a whole bunch of money, you know.
That's right.
Vote to label GMOs
and
all of that. But there are some examples of that.
And we must publicize that widely throughout the country. Richmond's successful example and several others like that.
Yes.
And so people will have hope, right?
Exactly.
And they'll be able to go forward.
And energy, you know, that's like a fuel.
Yes, indeed. I'd like to mention that Prop 37, how that was decimated by big money from the big food.
With absolute lies.
We were ahead 2-1 in October, and then with all that onslaught of the airwaves by Monsanto and Cargill and all the other ones.
Remind people what
Prop
that was
37
about.
Was to label GMOs. And that was such a normal, rational decision that most Californians supported, 2-1. And these guys come in with $46 million against several million that we had, and just lied about it and won by a couple of percent. So that's dollar democracy on steroids.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show. We're going to take a short musical break. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Peter Phillips. My co-host is Laura Wells, Green Party activist in Oakland, ran for governor back in 1998. And Peter Matthews, we're interviewing him about his book, Dollar Democracy. Well, he's a political science instructor down at Cypress College. And we've been really laying out some of the issues that are facing us here, corporate money, how big corporations can literally buy politicians or invest, wealthy people are investing in campaigns. Now, we had the Occupy movement in the U.S., and it grew very rapidly in a variety of places, and people in even small towns were out in the parks and sitting in. And it really was highly infiltrated and police state managed, or they attempted to manage it. But it created an understanding about the 99 and the 1% that everybody has. Can we build on that? Is there a direction we can go with that, so that we understand the commonalities that middle class and lower class and people without money have relative to the global 1% and the 1% in the United States? What do we do, Peter?
Absolutely, yes. And I mentioned that in my book about Occupy being the iconoclastic movement that first pointed out the class differential. And we need to build on that, Peter. And then we come up with these demands that we could use and get the other former Occupy people who are still around. Let's have them galvanized by this idea of making specific demands, starting with no corporate money of their candidates, and massive demonstrations. Believe me, I believe very much in the inside-outside strategy. So as Occupy did so successfully point this out, they were out there in the parks, on the street. We've got to do that again, Peter, with our signs about that and continue and make those demands.
And certainly Black Lives Matter is a important resistance to police power and state power here in the United States, and growing and expanding, and the ability for citizens now to film the activities of police everywhere and get it out in the media through Facebook and others is remarkable and is really having a strong local activist approach. Laura, can you comment on that?
That's crucial. To have there be safety and social justice for people just walking the streets, which, by the way, I want to say, no change has ever happened without people taking to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
You do need to, you know, like, you need to vote. I'm always saying vote, vote, vote. Take to the streets. Be in the rallies. And these killings that have happened have been so outrageous, just so beyond, and being rationalized. Again, in Venezuela, any time that there's a killing by the police, there's a trial. They'd have a trial to see whether that was justified or not. It's like, not should we or shouldn't we, it's like immediate.
We're certainly addressing many problems here today.
Yes.
And we're talking about the need for Occupy-type activities. Certainly people mobilizing around issues is a key to importance of making these kinds of changes. What direction, what hope do each of you see that we can do over, say, the next decade? What are the immediate addresses, things that we have to address?
Can I tag on another question, actually, which is, Peter Matthews, I know that you teach at college, and I'm curious what you see as the hope in this coming up generation, the millennials, and what you see there. Because I see some strong areas of hope.
I do. I really do. In fact, and then my classes are always geared, including the sociology classes and the political science classes, geared toward what can we do to change the world for the better. And I remind them, and they know very well, that they've got 70 years to live, God willing. The rest of us might be gone sooner, but it's their world, their college generation world, and they are ready to act. They say, what can we do? They read my book and other books, and they say, this is really bad. We didn't know the details. What can we do to fix it? Then I show them what can be done and what has been done, and we go to history. You know, we look at Occupy and what Occupy did. So Occupy is alive and well, and we're going to keep that going, and you have them work with us, you know, all together.
Yeah.
And the students can get involved with that, too.
There's an organization called, well, the website is evolve-ca.org, the Evolve Organization. There are a lot of people working in that organization who were born after 1978, when we mentioned that Prop 13 that decimated taxing the rich. That was in 1978. And a whole lot of people that were born since then have recognized that that's a groundbreaking problem in California and in the United States in terms of getting rid of concentration of power and wealth in the dollar democracy. And that's very inspiring to me that they are people who were born after that problem came in. They read it as history. You know, they didn't live it as an election initiative. And they know that they've got to go for it. And they're calling it right out Reform Prop 13, whereas the older generation hasn't even wanted to mention the word because people have loved it so much. But that's one example. And it is organizing that they're working together.
And the split roll would work very well. You'd reform it by saying the corporations never needed that Prop 13 relief, but they got it, and they avoid all kinds of taxes because of it. But the homeowners that needed it should keep it. So that would bring in billions. Two-thirds of the money from Prop 13 went to the big corporations. And that is what
the benefit,
people,
right?
The benefit. Yeah. And that took money out of our schools and our cities and our parks programs. One thing I want to mention, if you don't mind, there's a pie chart in my book which shows discretionary federal spending for 2015, which President Obama signed into law. 55% of the budget goes to the military, 6% to education, 3% to science. It is unbelievable. It's completely different than what other countries are doing. China does it very differently. Germany does it very differently. And it shows in their civilian products. China, like I said, came up with the first advanced level solar panels, thin film solar panels. They're coming up with a new solar car, I mentioned. Germany has maglev trains. There's so much to be done with money that we could invest in America, not to mention our infrastructure here, which is totally falling apart. Peter, you know that. The Society of Civil Engineers in America say that it's going to take $2 trillion to rebuild our infrastructure and make it green infrastructure. So we could do that by cutting the defense budget, I would say at least by half, because we spend as much as all the other countries put together in the world, and it's outrageous.
We could spend serious amounts of money in designing desalinization plants that would be clean energy run and create massive amounts of fresh water to farm and irrigate Arizona and Nevada.
Exactly.
So that's, there's many, many things that could be
done
in some very positive ways. You know, you reminded me about Prop 13 and how commercial properties, banks, Bank of America was one of the largest landowners in the state at the time, they've been able to keep those rates down, even if the property changes owners, by corporate manipulations legally that allow them to keep that original tax base. And so that's another way that we've seen corporations be protected in terms of taxation.
I want to do a comment about desalinization is that when I was in Cuba, they had been working on desalinization, and because they're working on it and focusing on it and spending some research money on it, they have found a way to do it with one quarter of the energy that they did just a few years ago. So if you keep working on those things, if that's what your focus is and you're aiming for, you'll get there.
And that's where it takes investment, doesn't it? Public investment.
Yeah.
You can't just keep on talking about private investment like we do here. There's got to be a balance, public investment and private entrepreneurship.
Well, look at the public investment in the military, in the Pentagon. You know, that's
outrageous.
A huge amount of public investment. All we're asking is public investment in other areas.
Which really counts. May I just mention one more thing about the Pentagon? The soldiers and sailors are totally woefully maltreated. I have a story about Sean Aiken in the book, who one day in October 2011 found that his paycheck had gone from $3,300 a month down to $2,000 a month. The next month, it went down to $1,000. By December, it was a $117 paycheck. He was flabbergasted. This guy was a wounded veteran from Afghanistan. He had to pay rent with two children and his wife. Couldn't do it. He finds out the Pentagon says, well, we just overpaid you. We're taking what we overpaid you back from you. He says, show me the data. They couldn't do it. They wouldn't do it for several months. When Reuters got the story, they finally looked at the problem. They found that their auditing was so far off that they had taken money from him completely unnecessarily. It was his own money they took from him. And there are hundreds of soldiers that are facing this in the military now and veterans as well. But yet we'll buy the $337 million F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. It's outrageous.
For what purpose? I mean, that becomes that ultimate question. I mean, who are we fighting? Who are we trying to control?
It's the best way to concentrate money. Weapons, war, military defense.
It solves the problem of too much capital, not having enough places to put it in.
It takes it from all of us and puts it in the few pockets.
But then you blow things up and then you have to fix them.
Exactly.
Fix them again. So we need to go to war to use up the weapons. That's the problem. Yeah. And that's why we fight these unjust, unnecessary wars like in Iraq. And for example, if you look at how much money is just blown away, they have two sets of spare parts they bought for the Humvee. They didn't even know they had the first set because they are not audited. It's the only department in the government that's not audited, and they're supposed to be ready for audit by 2017. They are not even ready for that yet by now. It's just outrageous. So we got a lot to do here, and when you inform the public, again, I believe as the people come to know these things, most American people, most people in the world have great hearts and good minds. When they're educated and know about these things, they will make the change.
And they've got to know there are alternatives.
And there are that's the key, showing their alternatives.
I remember how Rumsfeld announced on September 10th, his first year in office, that they couldn't account for $1 trillion in the Pentagon budget. And then the next day, 9/11 happened, so nobody paid any
attention
whatsoever.
Look
exactly.
At that. Yeah. This is our money, the people's money. It's not their money. By the way, the lobbyists, like Lockheed Martin's lobbyists, they spend $1 for every $1,500 they get in contracts. $1 in lobbying fee brings them $1,500 in contracts from the government. And the revolving door, 70% of American generals and admirals go to work for the defense contractors as lobbyists once they retire. That's a fact. From 50%, it's gone to 70% now. And politicians go to work for lobbyists and get paid 10 times as much. And all that's in my book, by the way, Dollar Democracy. Liberty and justice for some. How to reclaim the American dream for all.
Right,
there is
right.
Hope, Laura.
Yeah, there is an all in there.
Yes, there is.
We're almost out of time. So last words, Peter Matthew, what would you like to say?
And I just love the progressive Pacifica stations. I mean, you're the one alternative that we need because the corporate media runs everything in America. And we're the voice that will dissent and tell the truth. So thank you for what you're doing.
Laura, thank you so much for coming in and helping co-host today, and you have much to say.
It was great.
I really enjoyed that participation.
We want a liberated land, supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own my special interest groups that fund.
You are tuned to the Project Center Show on Pacifica Radio. Special thanks to our producer, Anthony Fest, and our engineer, Erica Bridgman. The Project Censored Show airs on 25 stations around the U.S. Archives can be found at projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, and we'll see you next time.
We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring, an anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces, slavery for almighty dollar bills. We won, we got the love of the brothers and our sisters. Habitualized, alibis, disguise, under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, war, spawn for little boys. And the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks on the prisons and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. In the times when the master thief can find and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu. We gone.